about. So, but that's not really what I came to talk about so much as I have to ask a question. Why are we so intent on capping the number of drivers? The way I'm seeing what I've been hearing from coming to these meetings is that there's two main reasons for setting caps, and the first one is congestion. The other one is trying to ensure that drivers make a living. And I want to challenge those notions. For every let's start with congestion. For every adult driving age passenger in an automobile, right, or riding in an Uber or a taxi, you're eliminating one more car off the road. In addition to that, the cars that are out there moving people around are getting full utilization out of those cars, and they are taking up less parking spaces around the city. So that's eliminating another form of congestion. Now, another concern had to do with pollution and exhaust emissions and everything. Well, Uber drivers, I can't speak for everybody, but I can speak for ride shares, the Ubers and Lyft people. A lot of us are in this business for ourselves, and we have a financial incentive to drive cars that are fuel efficient. A lot of us have Priuses. I own a Prius. Some people own Leafs or other electric, fully electric automobiles. Now the other thing I wanted to mention is that when you're talking about ensuring that the drivers that are out there can make a living, is it really the city's job to ensure that people can make a living? I thought in order to make a living, you have to be able to provide a service that people value and that people are willing to pay for that service. That's what determines whether or not you make a living. But if the city is setting things up in such a way that you limit the number of people out there doing that job so that all of them can make a living at it, then we're kind of moving beyond what should be a business operation to a de facto welfare program. And I like to suggest that if you're looking at capping licenses for people to drive in the city, how are you going to cap what the demand is out there for the people? Because when you do that, you're going to constrain the people who actually need a ride. We're going to go back to having longer wait times and even people not getting rides. Now, it may not happen right away after you pass some sort of capping scheme, but over time, as things change, we're going to be right back where we started from, and who knows, maybe there'll be another disruptive technology to come in and kind of change the playing field like it's happened before. So thank you very much for your time, and I'm finished.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Kadir Wako. I'm the general manager of Union Car Cooperative. I have been in taxi industry since 1998 when I first started as a cab driver. Union Cab was established in 2013 after working diligently for 3 years to be issued 50 permits. Union Cab is a company affiliated with CWA, AFSCIO, and Job with Justice. We followed the rules, we followed the process, and we did it right. We chose the taxi industry for our livelihood so that we may support our families and provide our children with the choice they will need to be successful. Deregulation. The removal of cabs on permit will saturate the market and dilute the earning potential of all drivers, taxi and TNC alike. This will have a grave consequence on many families of drivers who are already limited in their ability to earn a living wage. The taxi industry, however, has cabs because of its unique nature and it is part of public utility system. Balancing on the supply and demand of the taxi allows system to operate sustainable and allows driver to make a living wage. A cabs ensure the taxi company can deliver on the city mandate service requirement. Cab is not monopoly. It is simply a monitoring system administration can use. If all cabs are removed on the number of taxis in the TNC that are serving the market, the supply floodgate will open. Yet the underlying demand will remain unchanged as we have have witnessed. The result race to the bottom with no one making a reasonable income and the fallout of our industry to most dedicated drivers. If the driver are no longer able to earn an income, their option for family survival will be extremely limited. Drivers and their family could quickly become homeless and consequently depend upon welfare. The burden will then fall on the city and ultimately the taxpayer. Under your leadership, Mayor Harris, taxi drivers and the small cab company are suffering from the wrong regulation taken by your office. In 2012, City of Portland study showed that taxi drivers barely make a living wage based on hours. There is no change for the drivers except flooding the city with a thousand of vehicles. Increasing the number of permits does not increase the number of the driver's income. Mayor Hills, as the son of cab driver, please remember the time away from the home that your father committed daily driving. Fees. Union cab fees pays those permit fees by collecting from cab owners of the company. 1,000 company annual fee, 600 vehicle annual fee per vehicle, and $100 driver annual fee. The application permit fee must be uniformly applied to all for hire transportation companies, including technology taxi company or TNC. Technology taxi company must carry adequate commercial insurance like any other taxi company. Most importantly, in the upcoming months, there will be another 250 cabs added to the Portland metro area. We ask the City Council to authorize more cab stands in the following areas: all major hotels and motels in Portland metro area, shopping centers like Safeway, Fred Meyer, Winkos, and Walgreens, and all Northwest Portland area per district restaurant and bars. By adding those cab stands, the City of Portland will avoid congestion that already highly congested by Uber drivers in those already overpopulated areas. We highly urge the City Council to establish a level playing field and carefully consider the impact on drivers when determining the right balance between increasing supply and preserving family wage. Thank you.
Thank you. Afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Tasfai. I think most of you know me. And the testimony I'm giving is submitted already to all of you. I am lucky. 40 years ago, I was politically prisoner in Ethiopia because I opposed the country's dictatorship. I was tortured daily. I just wanted to die at the time. But somehow, I escaped with my life. Over time, I got married, moved to Portland, and raised a family of four children. I was able to achieve the American dream thanks to the goodness of the City of Portland, one of you, Mayor Charlie Hills. I was able to, the City of Portland. This war, I earned the opportunity to be a cab driver, then co-founder of Green Transportation. Since being founded in 1997, our company, which operates sedan, taxis, shuttles, medical, and web transportation, had been doing very well. Over the years, we have taken a keen pride in operating a well-run business with a little to no debt. We provided family wage income until April, applied for additional permit 2 years ago, and followed all the procedures the city established, including showing the demand for more taxis. After going through all the steps in good faith, I was awarded new permits 2 months before the pilot project. Part of getting these new permits was the requirement that I purchase web vehicles, which I did right away. This year, I paid 18,450 permits to 82 permits. Then along comes Uber, without going through any procedure, spelled out to the city code, they were suddenly granted unlimited ability to put an unlimited number of taxis on the road, with no real requirement for wheelchair-accessible vehicles, and no requirement to the same level of insurance that branded taxi companies are required to provide. And Uber only paid $20,000 permit fee for its unlimited number of vehicles. Uber and Lyft have approximately 3,200 vehicles on the streets of Portland. If they paid the same permit fee that the branded taxi companies in Portland paid combined, they would owe the city of Portland almost $2 million. None of this is fair. Why and how did this happen? It is because Uber bullied the city into approving an opportunity that was denied me for years. Like the other branded taxi companies in Portland, Green Transportation is small business. We provided web services. We give 24/7 coverage to all area of the city, and we pay in commercial insurance. Many of the branded taxi drivers in the city are immigrants, just like me. The same stories and life experience similar to mine. You have given a $50 billion California-based company an advantage over us. Then, when the trial period began, you said Portland existing branded taxi companies could have an unlimited number of cars, too. After spending $500,000 on new wheelchair vehicles, I could not afford to buy another vehicle. Portland city leaders, I thought, had rewarded my company for providing exceptional service, but I was wrong. You have instead helped to drive my business into a state of disrepair. I have several web vehicles that are not being driven now because my many drivers cannot sustain their family by driving them. They say they cannot afford to serve personnel with disabilities because those are not the most profitable. How is this that solves the web problem here in Portland? It's not. It has just created a new problem. Green transportation has spiraled into debt. What is the message this sends to Portland-grown businesses if an out-of-state company come here, ignore all the rules, and operate as it pleases, forcing local companies out of business? The city of Portland has failed miserably on 4 of the 8 guidelines principles of the so-called pilot project. The current regulations have not provided an environment that promotes for fair competition.
Yes, I want you to wrap up.
Sir. Yes, the current regulations are giving Uber and Lyft competitive advantage, excluding web services. Taxi drivers are no longer able to make living wages. And there is not an effective enforcement that is ensuring that an Uber and Lyft are following the same regulation they have put in place. If only you had figured out a way to honor those of us who have invested everything into our company, a cap on the number of branded and unbranded taxis would have helped. But in the end, I still feel lucky. I survived prison and daily torture by a very corrupt government. I can survive this. But green transportation may not survive. We have followed your rules. If we fail, it is on you. Can I say something just in addition? We have followed the insurance, the web, the permitting processes, and the background check. We've done everything we can do, but on the back of us, the billion-dollar companies have come and push us into the corner. Maybe we are going to go out of business. But what we need is a level playing field so that we're not one thing that everybody is trying to say is we are not asking Uber to get out. We're asking to have the same level field, insurance, permitting. Why do we think that they do not want to use the city of Portland for permitting? Because If we're asking the number of vehicles, if they are paying for the number of vehicles, they will know. If they are paying for the number of drivers, they will know. If they are paying for the company, they will know. Everything will be known if it goes through the city of Portland. It has to go. It has to be done that way. That's what we have done.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
I just want to add, there is a way to naturally cap the drivers in this area, and that is through the market. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Others that we have signed up?
Okay. Jeanette and Kirk, if you'll come up.
Come on up.
Kurt Foster.
What's this? This is just people that...
Go ahead.
The other gentleman wants to testify.
So actually, at the end of the last hearing, there was a procedural issue with the council clerk not being able to take additional sign-ins, even though at the end of every hearing we always say, does anybody else want to testify? So I took the list of the four names of the
folks
who were here last week.
Yeah, we'll certainly take those folks. So please go ahead.
Jeanette Thiebert. Thank you. Yes, I drive with Radio Cab. Mayor Hales, Commissioner Novick, Commissioner Salzman. It's become clear over time that many of you might want to leave a lasting legacy. That might be important. The 120-day extension to this current issue might be quite the gift for that opportunity. So while many things have come to light recently that may not be part of the legacy that you'd like remembered, this is your golden opportunity. We missed an opportunity to, in the beginning, do data gathering before we implemented the pilot project, okay? But I want you to do a couple things and ask yourself, make your decision-making based on what is best for all of the people of Portland? And I said people, not corporations. Okay? It's become very clear that, oh, let me back up. Most everyone here has a spouse, and some of us have children. So when you're in discussion and decision making, I want you to remember what it's like to live in a house with teenagers, because you might be experiencing deja vu. When this began, the TNCs, Uber and Lyft, Uber in particular, easily, they approached the city, they easily could have done business in Portland a year and a half ago. Okay? It would have caused a slight mindset shift. They chose not to. What I'm asking you to do is practice restraint, practice discipline, and occasionally say no. When they could easily provide full coverage insurance, they choose not to. They could easily put fire extinguishers in all their cars. They're resistant. They could easily provide coverage 24 hours a day in all the neighborhoods of the city for people in wheelchairs. They have not chosen to go far enough to find solutions. They want to do the chores that are easy, the ones that they like. They don't want to do the work, okay? And they don't want to be held accountable, to be responsible. Nobody has to do business in this city. No one. We get to, it is a privilege, and with that comes responsibility. If your teenager came to you and said, Mom, Dad, I'm 17, house rules, they shouldn't apply to me, I'm almost an adult. Would you agree? Why did Uber get to come here and not abide by the rules? If your teenager came to you and said, wow, I'm almost an adult, I'd like to set my own in my own allowance. We've allowed Uber and Lyft to set their own wages. And then, oh, because they do it, now everyone else gets to. Okay? We don't treat teenagers this way. Why do we allow corporations to act like teenagers?
Thank you.
Leave a legacy your children would be proud of.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Welcome.
My name is Kirk Foster with Wapato Shores Transport, and Testify said most of what I had to say, so I'll jump right to the end of what I said. Summarize first out, I think everything needs to be just looked at from a question of equity or equality. We have a lot of, like Testify's, well-run cab companies that are perfectly capable of competing on a level playing field, and that's what it has to be, a simple equality all the way through. There should be no separate rules for TNCs or insurance companies or taxi companies. They should have the same insurance requirements, same signage, mm-hmm. same background checks, same. It should be all the same across the board. If it's all the same across the board, the TNCs will suffer a little more, and the taxi companies will have an equal playing field, and then whoever's best will come out on top mm-hmm. in the end. Simple as that. There should be no special rules for either group, and it should be the same. I'll just leave, and like I said, Testify said everything pretty much else on that subject I want to say. I want to touch on the WAVE funding thing because that's something I'm more specially involved in. The reason that there hasn't been equality for WAVE transport in this city or equal access or equity or however you want to phrase it for all these years is one simple thing, and it's cost, both cost of service and opportunity cost. It takes roughly 50% longer to do a WAVE ride than an ambulatory ride because the driver has to deploy the lift, assist the person on the lift, get them into the van, secure the wheelchair, help them with the auxiliary seat belts, you know, stow the lift, do the ride, and then repeat everything on the back end. If a driver is struggling to survive, why would they take a WAVE ride when they can do two ambulatory rides at the same time and double their revenue given the necessity of keeping equity of cost to the passenger? So that is the reason the problem has been there in the city. It's always been the reason, and it's always going to be the reason until the problem is solved. The only way, and so I'm just going to bring this back around that to that specifically, because that problem existed before, and regardless of what you do with the TNCs, this needs to be addressed, and this is a good opportunity to address it now and not kick the can down the road again. The idea of the funding that the task force presented, the idea of reimbursing, is the only, I think it's a good idea. I think it's the only way that it's going to work. It's ridiculous to have anybody suggest that we fund somebody's purchase of equipment or fund a startup business to provide WAVE service, a startup business that has not proven they can do it. If the city collects funds and reimburses every driver or owner or cab company or TNC or anybody for that matter that provides WAVE service after the fact, the city will both have all the data it needs because the WAVE passenger's name will be known and they can be surveyed to check for quality of service. The operator or whoever they may be can be reimbursed for the additional cost. A WAVE ride is roughly 275% of the cost of an existing ride. And if every driver of any organizational structure goes ahead and does a WAVE ride, collects the same fee from that passenger they would collect from any other passenger, and then the city reimburses them the difference in cost, then there will be no disincentive, no lost opportunity cost for a driver to choose an ambulatory ride over a WAVE ride, and there will be no cost reason to choose an ambulatory ride over a WAVE ride. So the entire problem will be eliminated if we can have after-the-fact reimbursement for WAVE rides citywide. And that's the nut of what I want to say.
Could you give me that number again as to how much more expensive a WAVE ride is?
Approximately 275%.
Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you very much. Welcome.
Yes. my name is Ombe Yamakano, and I drive for Uber. And actually, I'm just going to start by quoting some of my passengers. I will start by a gentleman from Bend who was so mad that Portland couldn't allow Uber to come to Portland. And you know what he said? He said it's a very stupid idea to fight the technology, very stupid idea to fight progress. Shouldn't be, not here and nowhere in the world, because that's just keeping human intellect from developing. We shouldn't be fighting progress, and we shouldn't be fighting technology. If the other one said Soviet Union was collapsed just because they failed to keep up with the technology. The other one said Roman Empire, when they failed to fight Christianity, what did they do? They joined them. If you can fight them, you join them. As easy as that. We used to have in this in Portland, we used to have Washington Mutual. Mm-hmm. We used to have Montgomery Ward here. Where are they? And they're all older than a radio cab and so on. But they went out of business. Why? Because they couldn't keep up with progress.
Technology.
If you can't keep up with progress, you have to go. As simple as that. Is another thing when, you know, maybe we can request just the city council to try to make some regulations here. Uber doesn't disagree with that. But their intention is not really regulations. Their intention is to keep Uber out of business. I had a passenger who was visiting the Northwest from, from Miami or something. And he was in Seattle. He only had one extra day, and he wanted to visit either Portland or Vancouver. He went online. He checked. He saw in Vancouver there is no Uber. But in Portland, there was Uber. So his choice was easy. He came to Portland, and he got me. He told me, my friend, I only have 4 hours. Show me all the landmarks of Portland. I showed him around, starting by Pioneer Square. I took him to Washington Park. I took him to Blazers Stadium. I took him even to Multnomah Falls. In just 4 hours, he left $166 here in Portland. What's wrong with that?
Nothing. Great. Thank you.
That's my question.
Thank you very much. Thank you all. So we do have some more folks, because you've completed your list, right? And we have these folks who signed up at the end of the hearing. So I'll call them Gene Nations, Linda Robb, and Frank Choto, if you're here. Nicola Batrachuk. Okay, come on up, please. Any of those four folks that are here, come on up. Afternoon.
Good afternoon to you, Lord Mayor, commissioners, and citizens of Portland. It's always a privilege and a pleasure to appear before you.
Oh, put your name in the record, please, Frank.
My name is Frank Choto. I've been around. I started driving back in 1986 after completing college here in Portland. Some things need to be said. The first is, and it comes as news that might upset, but this is a new day and a new age and a new technology and a new industry that is upon us, manifesting itself as the TNC. And from all indications, it is here to stay, not just in the city of Portland, but throughout the world. They're in my hometown where I grew up back in Africa, and they're here. Now, but we have citizens who have expectations and who vote and who are hopeful that these new technologies will go away, but they will not. And we therefore need to be honest with them and raise our level of discussion here by telling them that there is the possibility that these companies are not going away. I've joined them comfortably. I'm not scared of them. And make them understand that this is the new playing field. These companies are here. And pose the question, given the continued presence of these companies amidst us and doing what they do, how do you as taxi companies then move forward and manage to survive and perhaps even thrive? It's not an easy question, but it is a question that needs to be asked so as not to sit here and give them the false hope that these discussions are going to end in these companies exiting. I don't see it. But since my time is running out, so let me just touch on insurance, because that's a big thing. And I suspect from listening to the testimony that you're not getting everything you need to be told about insurance. Insurance can destroy a company in the blink of an eye, and that's why it is so hard. Now, how have the taxis dealt with it. They're not telling you everything, and I'm not blaming them for not telling you everything. Some of these are seen as trade secrets. Some of these are seen as irrelevant. But you need to know this, that most taxi companies have something called an accident fund. It is a fund quite outside of insurance, and which is used to cover accidents. So they never use their policy to cover these things. Because when you use your policy to cover your accidents, your rate goes up, and it will destroy you. It almost destroyed me. Now, I briefly suggested about 6 months ago that insurance need not all be in the public sector, I mean in the private sector, that perhaps it is time to approach the insurance commissioner down in Salem and raise with them the possibility of insurance through the public sector. Because there was a referendum here about 15 years ago, and which authorized that, and which the construction industry has taken advantage of, because it is an expense. One more thing, and then I'll be done. Parking for these cars is an issue that needs to be addressed. Maybe a monthly pass so they can park. I'm tired of quarters being slipped into the machines. A monthly pass would be nice. And also, no one ever raised the questions, all these people who drive, what toilets do they use? And if they're tired, where do they go? And if they have a flat tire on a Sunday night, who fixes that? And we do have some good ideas. The scope of my remarks here obviously cannot delve into that. You have other things to do. But if some of us who are interested in these issues would be given an opportunity, not in a forum like this where we can't really get into them in depth, but we've thought about them for years and we have some good ideas, it would be nice to meet with your staff to chart out some of these things. Lastly, the people testifying here are the people who always testify here, and they represent a minority of the driving community. Sometimes you need to go over there to where the drivers are to get testimony over there. There are places where they congregate, like at the backfield at the airport, hundreds of them. And then you will get a different perspective from the pure driver.
Thank you.
Okay? Not the owner who also controls a few permits on the side and has a vested interest in other than just pure driving. Thank you.
Hello.
I'll give you the
chance. I'm that driver.
Okay, we're going to give you the chance to have the last word. Go ahead.
I'm really sorry.
Just give us your name.
Commissioners, my name is Babak Talai, and I know you've all seen me. Unfortunately, I'm very passionate, and as you can tell, I'm hardly able to breathe right now. So I'd like to throw some words up. My words are this: sophistry, bullying, and there's one more, but I just can't get it out right now. This is essentially what Uber has been doing, sophistry. The gentleman sat there, not this gentleman, but the other gentleman, and laughed while my sister was testifying in this space. And, you know, the body language of that other gentleman.
Okay, but please
there,
tell us your
right.
point.
What I want to say is I remember when Commissioner Novick asked, you know, we let Walmart in here and nothing happened. You know, it's still making me cry every day over that question that the gentleman put up. I remember Commissioner Fritz, what a lovely question that was to Uber. How much insurance have you got? And the reply was enough. Sir, I have a question for it. You have been, you know, through different publication have been said that you and Uber seem to share an advisor. Sir, I don't really have any idea of what you stand for, but Commissioner Fish has really put some very smart, intelligent questions on the table. What I wish to say is I'm not against the drivers that drive for these other companies, these multinational companies, by the way. They're not the mom and pop,
you know.
Whatever operation that they make out when they put, you know, my brother Abdul, whoever it was, Abdi, last time he was talking about how he was buying a home when we first started. But anyways, if you guys had a dispatch, maybe you could, like, go to your dispatch and ask these very intelligent questions. I go to that beautiful lady in that white hair and ask her questions every day. I've been driving for Radio Cab for 3 years now. There are questions. There are lots of questions. But when you have just a smartphone and that's all that keeps you from whatever, the outer darkness, God help you. All I got to say is Walmart has managed to skim a lot of profits out of this small little city and walked off. I give a ride to two different schizophrenic lovely ladies in Lake Oswego, and they speak and have conversations all the time in the back of my cab, and I continually pick them up and drive them where they got to go. I get, if you want to know how many wheelchairs fit into a back of Prius, ask me. I can tell you. There's two very comfortably, and then two passengers can also ride. I can get one bicycle into a Prius and two passengers, God forgive me, in the front seat. These are the things that I've had to find out, and then through my command structure, I vet my questions and I get them answered.
Thank you.
We are a very self-sufficient company, but right now we have our hands tied behind our back because, as you all understand, Uber does not pay for the privilege of driving here. I don't know why they're here, through the grace of God or otherwise. It's a mystery, but I'm really sorry.
No, thank you.
I know
much.
I look like Vin Diesel, but brothers, if you put you on the sides of your cars, you will see that this radio cabbie will come and give you a hug. I am Woody Allen, and I'm not here to eat anybody's lunch. I'm just here to do what's right. I am a.
Thank you very much.
The only way I can describe me is that, you know, I'm here, I'm queer, and get used to it. Because I have way too many labels. I got disabled vet, I got immigrant, I got.
Thank you so much.
Many,
you.
Sorry about
thank
that.
You okay.
Thank you so much.
Okay, we appreciate you too. I think that was a good way to end this this public testimony. I'm serious. Thank you very much. Now, I know we want to bring staff up. I know there are a number of questions. So why don't we do that? Commissioner, bring PBOT staff up. Is that right?
Yeah, actually, Mayor, I'm wondering if we've got, for the first time, I think a representative of the insurance industry
yeah,
here.
I know
Ken
you
Brian,
want to have him here.
Who made a special trip. Yeah. And I've actually got a couple of questions for him, and I think we should take advantage of having him here because we've had
be
a lot of
helpful.
Discussion about insurance with yep. anybody from the industry here.
It would be very helpful. We could bring up experts and resource people, including Mr. Brian. That would be, I think, quite helpful. So,
Steve, it would be. Could I raise just a procedural question? Because since we're now in the end game here, for at least for today's hearing, can I just get a sense of how you want to handle our discussion? So, for example, we have a report that we can accept. That's just a as I said earlier, a ministerial function. We can accept it. Typically, we do not modify a report. Your report speaks for itself. We can accept or reject recommendations, but we're not apparently going to be doing the next level of regulation for a while. But there are specific things in the testimony that I think one or more of us want to address. What is your preferred approach for us to do that? It doesn't quite feel like we'd be. It doesn't quite feel like we would amend a report because the report speaks for itself. But to the extent we have, if there's a consensus on the council around any of the issues that have been raised and a desire to have staff come back with specific language and recommendations, how do you want us to handle that?
Well, as far as accepting the report, all that matters to me is that we actually have a vote in accepting the report before we leave today. As far as additional questions to staff, obviously staff will be here after today, and if people have questions they think that they'd be okay to postpone for a while, that's fine. If people have questions they want to ask the staff right now, that's fine as well. So, I mean, to me the bottom line is simply at some point today I want to have a vote in accepting the report, and if you want to take some time in advance of that to ask questions of staff or other guests here, that's fine too.
So let me sharpen my pencil. So if it's as of today the will of the council that we establish some criteria for insurance or any other issue, do we put that on the table today and ask staff to come back with specific language?
I don't know. I think that would be reasonable. I mean, at this point, we have extended the pilot for another 120 days, and what we're looking at is what the final regulations will be,
right.
And we're going to take some time to do that. If we have consensus, we can give staff some preliminary indication of what we'd want in final regulations, but it's not as if we're going to adopt final regulations tomorrow.
Oh, right.
So, yeah, I mean, speaking for myself, I didn't come prepared today to delve into the details of the insurance issue, knowing full well that we're going to have the committee take a look at this, and we have another 120 days, so I would feel very uncomfortable starting to do amendments on insurance today. I'm comfortable accepting the report or not, and continuing the charge of the committee to come back to us, but we're going to have several bites at the apple here, and we've had several bites, and I don't want to sort of live and die these issues every time that we consider this issue.
Yes, and except at some point, the council needs to make a decision on the policy questions. There are, in this memo that we were given dated August 20th, Portland Private for Hire Transportation Innovation Task Force recommendations relating to taxis and TNCs. There are, I believe, 20 different recommendations. I only agree with 5 of them. And it would seem to me to be helpful at some point before the committee continues on down the path that they've recommended for the council to give some direction, yes, no, or maybe, on each of the recommendations.
But, Commissioner, the committee has already issued their report, and we can do whatever we want with those recommendations.
What would be the process for deciding what to do with those recommendations?
Well, the process is we are going to propose final regulations to take effect before December 19th, and we'll have a discussion among the council about what is acceptable and not acceptable in proposed regulations. But as far as the task force is concerned, I actually thought that as of last week, we should consider their work in this phase done. However, some task force members have indicated that if there are specific questions that council would particularly like them to consider further at this point, have some capacity to do that. But, of course, council doesn't have to ask the task force to follow up on specific questions. We can follow up on them another way.
Steve, let me frame the practical consideration, just get your thoughts. So the thing I want to avoid is, in December, us agreeing to a set of regulations which the industry then says, well, we're going to need 6 months to transition into them. So, for example, we set insurance regulations in December, and people say, well, we're going to have to spend 6 months talking to private insurance, seeing if we can line it up, blah, blah, blah. And so there is a virtue at some point well before the end of the extended pilot period for the council to be clear about some of the baseline issues because the folks out here are going to have to, like around insurance, if we mandate certain levels of insurance, they're going to have to go find private companies that provide that insurance.
Actually, Commissioner, you've raised an excellent point, and that's actually the specific issue you raise is one that I wanted to ask Mr. Bryan about while he's here. How long does it take for the insurance industry to agree to sell insurance to people of a type that, and a coverage level they haven't before?
So, again, let me suggest that we bring Mr. Bryan up and maybe staff as well, because I think there are at least some issues we ought to get before our experts as questions, regardless of what happens next. So, please. Ms. Treat, do you want to come up, Leah, and bring staff with you? Okay, I might be able to accommodate that later, but it's again, we're accepting a report here, so. Okay, who'd like to begin?
Well, at the risk of, let's stick with the insurance first. I did have one minor question, and I'll ask after the insurance presentation. Okay.
Mr. Bryan.
Go ahead, Steve.
And first of all, actually, it would be great if you could hazard an answer to the question that Commissioner Fish, in effect, just asked, which is, suppose we decided in the near future that we were going to tell the TNCs that they need to have a higher level of insurance during period one. The TNCs have said that those products are not available. Some people on this council have the suspicion that if you call up an insurance company and say, I want X amount of coverage, what do I have to pay for it, they can answer that question pretty quick. So but do you have an answer to that question?
First, should I state my name for the record? I'm Kenton Bryan with Property Casualty Insurers Association. We're a national insurance trade association of about 1,000 member companies that write insurance. Some of them write locally, some of them write nationally, some of them write regionally. Our members write about 40% of the auto insurance policies in force across the country today. With that, there is not a simple direct answer to what you're saying. I can confirm this. The policies that would be in excess of what is currently required under the agreement, the national agreement, and what's in place in Portland today, those policies do not currently exist because they're not required to exist. Insurance companies can be responsive. They've frankly been quite responsive to the emergence of this transportation alternative. Not only had I never heard of, Uber 2 years ago, but insurance companies had not heard of Uber 2 years ago. And we spent a considerable amount of time coming to know how that business operates and frankly, being on the opposite side of some of these issues from them initially. But we've come to an agreement on what those minimums can be and what carriers are willing to write. And that's currently set at those mandatory minimums that you have in place in Portland today. So,
if there was a new taxi company, they can get $1 million. Why is it different for a Uber company?
Sure. Well, thank you for that question. Taxi companies are commercial enterprises, and they buy commercial insurance policies. What we're talking about is this hybrid of a person who is at one moment driving their private passenger automobile for private purposes, who then turns an app on their phone and becomes a commercial driving operator, or however it's defined in Portland language. And what the industry, what insurers have tried to do is to say, we need bright lines between those two activities. When you're a private passenger, when you're just a regular driver driving your personal car for your own purposes, you're covered by your auto insurance policy that you purchase. When you switch over and turn that app on, you become something different to your insurer than what we signed you up for, and therefore you need a different kind of coverage. The kind of coverage that is contemplated in the national compromise between insurers and the TNCs, and what is included currently in place in Portland, says once the app goes on, there's TNC insurance, which is not classically commercial insurance. It could be sold by your private passenger auto insurance as a separate policy or an endorsement on your private passenger auto policy. But there's a line, and on one side of the line is you as a normal driver driving your own car. On the other side of the line is you as a driver picking up passengers for money.
But we could sell. Why can't we say that Uber is like a taxi company? Why can't they as a taxi company can get the commercial insurance?
I think that I don't want to speak for what Uber's position on this. I can tell you that in a long at first battle, but then a negotiation process with Uber, insurers have come to see actuarially that that the arguments that are made by the TNC companies are, at least near as we can tell so far, accurate. That there's a difference between an Uber driver and a taxi driver in that the Uber driver is, sort of, for lack of a better term, minding their own business when they don't have their app on. They're not the same risk as a taxi driver that is commercially driving all the time that they're in their vehicle.
We're talking about when the app is on.
Sorry?
When the app is on. They're a commercial driver. Why does there have to be a distinction between when they've accepted a ride?
I think that this gets into the argument about how the council sees the activities of Uber and whether they see them as a commercial driving enterprise or sees them as a company that provides an app that allows people to sign up and provide transportation services. They will say, I suspect, that their model is different and their drivers are different. And I'm saying, as an insurer, that's not really something I can speak to directly, but I can say that insurers are writing these TNC policies as endorsements or standalone policies because we agree that we don't see them the same way as we would see a commercial taxi company or a commercial taxi driver.
But Mr. Bryan, I think the question we're asking is, what about if we required a certain level of coverage? Let's say the council did decide that as soon as you turn the app on, you have to have $1 million in coverage. I can see that there's sort of special negotiations between the TNCs and the insurance companies about what the rates should be. But in terms of just the level of coverage, if we imposed that requirement and Uber and Lyft said, well, it'll take us a year and a half to figure that out with the insurance companies, would that be a plausible statement? Or would it be more plausible to say, well, if they got $100,000 worth of coverage now, just multiply the cost by 10 and we'll sell you a policy for that?
Well, there are kind of two. The direct answer to your question is I'm not sure how long it would take exactly. It would take time. It wouldn't. I don't think it would take a year and a half, but it would take time for insurance companies to do the math and figure out if that's a product they can affordably sell. The other question I think that's important for policymakers, because I've heard this come up several times today, it is absolutely any policymaking body's right and responsibility to make laws to protect the public and determine what those minimums ought to be. The question is, what will the financial and market impact be of those decisions? I think that it's fair to say, although it's I have to be cautious to not make what industry would do statements, because that's against antitrust law, federal antitrust law, but I suspect that the level of participation that would be in place in the insurance market would be different with a policy requirement, with a minimum requirement in the $1 million at all times range versus minimum requirement.
So let's put it in terms that may be more familiar to some of us up here, once upon a time put a child on their insurance policy for their own car. So I remember the
did
first time.
Did that myself.
So you and I.
You feel my pain.
Both feel the pain of having the conversation with our insurance broker and saying that we're going to put someone on. So I guess with my daughter, probably, I don't know, just for argument's sake, right, when she was 19 or 20. Now, the insurance company didn't say that there was a question about whether they could give me coverage, and they didn't spend a lot of time talking about actuarial stuff. They said, if you put your daughter on the policy, it's going to double your rate. And I said, well, boy, that's not the best news I've had today. So what are my other options? They said, well, you can increase your deductibles for certain things and essentially self-insure as a way of reducing your costs. And if your daughter has a clean record over time, you'll get a discount and things. So I never had a debate with my insurance broker about the mechanics of insurance. They just told me what it would cost, and I either put her on my insurance or not. And I don't understand why, in the commercial context, it isn't the same matter. I understand that you're saying that the cost may be at a level that Uber or TNC doesn't like. That's not the question we asked you. We're asking, is an insurance company going to underwrite the insurance if we mandate it? And since insurance companies underwrite college football players and underwrite horses and underwrite my daughter, why on earth wouldn't there be a market for underwriting a commercial policy at the limits that we set, regardless of what the secondary question is about what the cost is?
To be clear, I've never said there wouldn't be a market. I have said that the market would be a different market for that product than the market for a product that's in place today.
Okay, but you've also said, very tellingly, that in the industry's view, there's a different actuarial model for that period of one.
Sure.
So why isn't that good news for TNCs? Because you've decided the industry can offer $1 million of insurance, but also through its own underwriting process, they can also make the judgment that's a pretty good business because it's very unlikely there's going to be much exposure during period one. Okay, so that's a good business. What's wrong with that?
What's wrong with that is that it, in the first place, if you define it as commercial coverage, that limits the number of carriers or the type of carriers that can offer the coverage. It says personal insurance. Writers of personal insurance policies can't enter that market unless they develop a commercial product, which has to be developed and approved by the insurance department and go through that process. And some companies would do that, and a lot of companies won't. There are a lot of companies out there that don't write commercial auto insurance. So you're limiting your pool of insurers. You're also limiting your pool of insurers who want to enter a market where the minimum limits are $1 million for that period one time period. Finally, I hope I'm answering your question. When you add your daughter to your policy, you're talking to your private passenger auto insurance company that's been writing private passenger auto insurance, maybe for you for a short time, but for the entire insurance by in public for maybe 100 years. So there's a lot of actuarial data, and they know what it's going to cost. So they have the data to price a product that, and they're going to compete with each other to provide that product for you and your family and the other drivers. In the case of this particular circumstance, we're talking about something that's new enough that that's why it's difficult for me to say how long it would take a product to be developed, how much it would cost. I mean, these are things that are sort of market-driven. They're also case law-driven. All the things that go into the price of the policy that, that you are providing for your daughter have been developed through years and years of case law and legislation and negotiated settlements in the course of auto accidents. So there's a lot of factors that go into pricing auto insurance policies, and some of those are not known yet. And the industry has tried to be responsive and develop products based on the known knowns, the things that they can actually actuarially price things out at, and that's what they're trying to do here.
Just so I'm clear, this is a complicated area, and I appreciate you walking us through it so clearly.
And I do want to be as clear as I can for you. So,
I hope you're on retain. I hope we can call you back on lots of issues because put it this way, I can understand you, which is saying something. So, what's the where TNCs offer the lower coverage in period one? Are you suggesting that by and large, that's just that's just rider insurance to a personal coverage?
It can be, yes. That's how it exists today in some markets.
So by keeping the limits low, it opens the door to this being coverage through private insurance, at least for period one, and the commercial insurance doesn't kick in until two and three. So what we're really arguing about, so the concern you're raising is that if you displace private insurance in period one, you're not sure whether there's a viable commercial market for that period, or at least you think it could take some time for it to be established.
I think it would take time for it to grow. I think that there could be a commercial market for both period one and period two if the limits are set at that high level. I think that just based on my even a layman's understanding of what private passenger auto insurers are interested in, there will be a lot fewer carriers that are interested in a market where the minimum limits are $1 million.
Could you just help me understand one other piece, and I appreciate your patience. In period one, where you turn on your phone and you're driving, and you're waiting to get a ride, and you run someone over, God forbid, are the current limits adequate for that event?
My guess is that if you are the victim of that accident or a family member of that accident, you may not believe so. However, you know, public policy is a trade-off in a lot of ways, and one of the issues that arises for all drivers is those mandatory minimum limits. I'm sorry, I don't want to interrupt your question.
Still, yes, we make trade-offs, but for the person who was crossing an intersection who is run over and killed by a distracted driver, the extent to which they can get compensation for medical, for any liability, is set now, at least with TNCs, at $100,000. And is that adequate?
That's really not a question I'm comfortable answering. I mean, that's a public policy question and issue.
The same person who is hit and killed in period two, I think would take some solace that we're up to $1 million. And I'm not sure I can make a clear distinction in my mind as to why we should have a tenth of the insurance for the same event simply because of an accident of timing.
Actually, it's a 20th because it's 50,000 currently.
Excuse me, a 20th. So anyway, I'm struggling with that because it doesn't – if our public policy concern is consumer protection, protecting the victim, I'm not so sure why we value life so differently in period one versus period two.
I think ultimately, as we discussed the term trade-offs, the thing to be cognizant of as you make that determination is if you want to have these transportation alternatives working, existing in your city, it makes a difference how much it costs them to enter that market. It makes a difference how much it costs for insurance and permitting and all the other things that have been discussed here today. I'm not arguing that you don't have a right to set those and that you have to weigh the public policy and public safety concerns that you're raising. I'm just arguing that there is a there is a cost impact to having a product where the minimums are here versus here, and that will that there will be a market response to that right. from the people that you're talking
let's
about.
Let's be clear. We either externalize that cost on an unsuspecting public or we ask an industry to incorporate that cost into their business model